Welcome to Women Waken, a podcast that helps you heal spiritually from trauma in relationships, childhood, and early life conditioning to shift from a place of codependency into a divine feminine state of love, harmony, abundance, and joy. On Women Waken, we begin the journey to waken from the illusion of needing to prove our worth into the divine experience of knowing our worth. I'm your host, Whitney Walker. I'm a licensed mental health therapist, and I specialize in substance abuse, addiction, eating disorders, trauma, and spirituality. I'm also a fellow human being who has experienced most of the issues that I explore on this show. On today's guest episode, I welcome such a special and wonderful guest, Dr. Maisha Claiborne. Dr. Maisha is an integrative medicine physician. She's also an international speaker, an author, hypnotherapist, and NLP practitioner, mind remapping and behavior transforming specialist, and the host of her own podcast. Dr. Maisha really does it all. And together on this episode, we talk about it all. Dr. Maisha shares about her own unique view and understanding of trauma and how she helps people work through this trauma at a not just an individual level, but within organizations and groups, working within companies and helping people to release the deep-held beliefs and hang-ups that they have that are keeping them from effectively expressing themselves, asking for what they need, and being able to flourish in their environments. It's a really beautiful and fun conversation. There's even some dancing involved. It's a great time. So take a listen and enjoy. Welcome, Dr. Maisha. Welcome to the Women Waken podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Whitney. I'm so excited to be here. Looking forward to the conversation.
Me too. I've been looking forward to this for a while because we had such a fun and a beautiful conversation. Feels like months ago now. It couldn't have been that long ago. And it's been too long because we got to get into it. We hit on so many different topics. We're really jiving, but I know we're going to get right back into that gear because you are a fantastic, remarkable woman doing incredible work. You are an integrative medicine physician, an international speaker, an author. You also specialize in hypnotherapy and NLP, mind remapping and behavior transforming specialist, as well as the host of the Black Mind Garden podcast.
Yes. And actually, I forgot to tell you this before. I actually just started a new podcast called Behind Beliefs and Behaviors. So,
congratulations.
So yes, I'll send you information on that. Yes. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I've made this transition and I won't spend too much time on it, but because when I started the Black Mind Garden 4 years ago, it was for a particular audience with a particular thing in mind. And I just wanted to give my content, give my wisdom in a way that was more accessible to a wider population. So just wanted to share that with you.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. And maybe on that note, we can start with this new sort of reframing of your podcast. What is it that you're all about right now? I would love for you to eventually take us back and tell us more of your story, but what is your forte? What's your focus right now?
Yes. So while I'm an MD, and I'll talk about that transition a little bit later, but I actually don't practice clinical medicine anymore. I focus on teaching people, organizations, teams, trauma-informed communication. And I talk a lot about psychological safety. Perhaps it has to do with my own upbringing and background, but I'm very, very passionate about human behavior, why we do the things we do, and mitigating harm and trauma in organizations by teaching people how to listen and how to communicate in ways that help you connect with people.
Beautiful. That is so important.
Yeah.
It's very important, very needed, and not often talked about, not often enough, but people are so yearning for that right now. I feel like, Maisha, they want that. You know, when people hold seminars in corporate workspaces and just hold community gatherings or anything where you're focusing on that, it means a lot to people to
Yeah.
actually talk about what's real for them, what's not working for them, how they wish they were maybe spoken to or understood or given a certain amount of understanding and respect from others. Because we can get so caught up in our day-to-day lives and the way that, our work environment is, that we just kind of let things slide until we realize that we're on a daily basis feeling devalued,
Yeah.
or even, mistreated.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And the truth is, we are beings of connection. We want connection. We crave connection. And also, we are beings that need and crave safety, whether it's physical safety, emotional safety, or psychological safety, or even just identity safety, being ourselves, right? Being able to be ourselves. And so that's, I think what a lot of people don't understand is that the connecting between people is a lot simpler than we realize. It really is about communicating. It's really about the nonverbal as well as that verbal communication on a day-to-day basis.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, Maisha, can you take us back and share how did you come into your interest and focus on this work, into this realm? How did you first become an integrative medicine physician and then move more into the realm of hypnotherapy and NLP and mind remapping? I'm very interested to hear.
Yeah. Well, so what I'll share is that I think I've always been the salmon swimming upstream, like I've always sort of been outside of the box. In college, I thought that I would be a chemistry major. I was pre-med from the time that I stepped into at Emory University. And I realized about, sophomore year that chemistry and biology and those typical sciences as a major wasn't going to do it for me. And I took my first Psych 101 class and fell in love, just like understanding the brain and understanding behavior. And when I took my first abnormal psych class and behavioral psych class, it gave me, oh, this is my calling, like to really understand people. And perhaps it's because I grew up in a home where I witnessed domestic abuse. And so there was a lot of that why. There was a lot of that, well, why does this person hit my mom, right? And I didn't understand, like, why does she stay? And so like there was a lot of why. And then when she finally did, leave, I was very grateful. Just so you know, my mother is okay and she's living her best life in Mexico, retired with her new amazing husband, my bonus father, just so that you all know that. But like, that's the history. And so I think that gave me that wondering of why people behave the way they do. So then I was pre-med though. I went to medical school. And I was interested in family medicine because family medicine has the most variety, in my opinion, from the womb to the tomb. We take care of people. And then my senior year in college, I actually was introduced to this book called Between Heaven and Earth. And it was the first introduction to something outside of traditional medicine. It was all about five element theory. It was all about how the elements intersect into our lives and the energies that move and play into what we do in our well-being. And so that's what got me into integrative medicine from the beginning of medical school. And then I just, I went from there, became a Reiki master, started delving in aromatherapy. Yep.
Okay,
Yes.
what don't you do, Rachel? Like, what? I
Trained
want
in
to come to, do you
acupuncture.
have a spa? Do you have a clinic? Do you have an in-person clinic?
I don't anymore, but that was one of my dreams. Man, I'm certified in acupuncture. I'm a yoga practitioner for 17, 18 years. Wanted to be a yoga instructor. I wanted a whole wellness center. That was my dream. And I practiced and had a mini wellness center for many years. And then I decided that I needed to, like, I love doing the one-on-one work, but I felt like I could be making a bigger impact. And I looked around and my colleagues were burning out. And I said, you know what? If I help doctors, I'm helping thousands of patients.
Wow.
Yeah. And so that's what had me transition out of clinical medicine into coaching. And during that time, prior to that time, I had become an NLP, hypnotherapist, practitioner, master practitioner, and then trainer. And at some point, in coaching, the pandemic happened. Or I like to call it the tridemic, the pandemic, the police at the, the violence, and the isolation and mental health crisis, right? That's what we call we call the tridemic. And I thought, how can I, again, impact at a even higher level? And that's when I started wanting to go into organizations, because I said, well, if I go into organizations and I impact the leaders in organizations, and I can talk to the employee resource group leaders, that's hundreds of thousands of people in just one organization and their families. And so that's kind of like how I've come to do what I do now.
And what is your primary mission? Like what is your mission statement when you go into these places and you want to share the good word, the good mess? What is that for you? What are you sharing with them?
I want this is so my calling is to teach people the tools, particularly leaders, the tools of listening and communication that leave people, particularly their employees, their teams, feeling seen, feeling heard, feeling valued, respected, and thriving, helping them to thrive inside of their organization, right? That is the goal. We all want to be seen, heard, connected, valued, respected. We all want to belong, feel included, right? And that's what I teach leaders and to do.
Beautiful. And when it comes to the way that people respond best to whether it's feedback or communication, a lot of it can be impacted by events throughout their lives, their early life, by trauma. Not all of it is. There are some, I think, basic tenets of communication that we all appreciate, but different people communicate differently. And sometimes, again, that's why the workspace is so interesting, because you're just kind of throwing all these people from different walks of life together and expecting them all to act the same and respond the same and have the same needs.
That's
It's not the
right.
case. So it sounds like you're trying to offer a more nuanced understanding of individuals and see how will this person really thrive and how can they thrive by the way that I'm working with them and giving them feedback and instructing them.
Yeah, that's why, and that's one of the big reasons that I lead in with teaching people about how their brain works and how their brain works differently from other people's brain, and how many people don't recognize the influence of trauma on a lot of how people, interact and communicate, react and respond. And so when we start to think about, oh, this person may have experienced some trauma and their reaction is not just a bad personality, like it's some actual involuntary response, or it's a response and they don't have the skill set to regulate themselves, then we start to listen with different ears, with a different lens. The other thing is just even understanding outside of trauma, like the universality of trauma, that we've all at some point experienced something that has traumatized us, whether it's stuck or whether we've been able to heal it and release it. But to understand just at the basic level that we all have different upbringings, different past experiences, different values, inherited beliefs. And when I'm talking to you, I'm talking from my set of values and beliefs and past experience to you who have had a different set of values, beliefs, and past experience. And I have to understand that instead of thinking, oh, well, you think like me because we connected and we're about the same age and whatever the case may be, we look same, or we have the same color skin, or we have the or people assume we have different color skin, so we must be different. We must have had totally different experiences, and to some extent that could be nuanced. Like there are lived experiences that I have that you will never have, and there are very much shared experiences with us both being women. And then there are probably shared experiences. I don't proclaim to know how old you are, what generation you're in. You'll tell me, I'll let you tell me if you feel like it. But I'm an X gen, and so any other X gen who, yeah, any other Generation X person around me, there was a shared experience, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm 38, so I'm millennial.
Aha, yes,
Right.
yes.
But I feel very much like a 90s Gen X person at times. I've got both hearts in both places.
Yes.
But Maisha, I would love for you to share about, 'cause thank you so much for offering that you the importance of taking people's backgrounds and their trauma into account, that it impacts how they respond to things and situations. There's so many beautiful and wonderful and helpful theories and concepts around trauma these days. It's a big topic, and rightfully so. It's so crucial to look at the things that have shaped us, more importantly, shaped our beliefs, because to me, that's what trauma does. It often creates this solidified core belief about ourselves
That's
that can
right.
be very have really strong repercussions.
Yes.
And
Yes.
so the question is, what do we do? What do we do with that trauma? So I'd love to hear your view. What is your theory? What's your concept around trauma and the healing, the relieving, the release of trauma from our system so that we can move on and be free to live our lives and not feel beholden by this fear that was developed from the trauma, this core false belief that was developed from the trauma?
Yeah. So I'll start, but I'll start the way you started, which is so many ways to heal trauma. And the base of it is to begin to recognize, number one, that trauma informs us. And I was talking with a client of mine very recently, and she was sharing some interactions that she was having with her partner. And how the reactivity that was happening between them. And of course that raises the red flag of trauma being in the background. And so we were sharing in a subsequent session, and she said, I was talking with a friend, and I had this experience as a childhood, and I never realized that that would be something that would con that was considered traumatic. But when I think about it now, and I look back on it now, I recognize that that was not right. So oftentimes we survive through our youth. We develop these coping mechanisms. And even I myself, growing up in a home with domestic abuse, didn't recognize that I was considered a trauma survivor until I was in my mid-30s, because I was in at dinner with a friend who happened to be a PhD psychologist, psychotherapist. And something I said raised the flag, and she asked me. And I said, "Oh no, I grew up in a home of domestic violence, but I wasn't the one being hit. So no, I'm not a trauma survivor." Right? So I say all that to say that I think the first thing is to really like start to look at our lives and look at what could be the thing that's informing us. Is there trauma present? And beginning to let that settle, because I think we want to push it away. We want to, like, oh no, there's some shame around it. There can be embarrassment around certain things. So I think that's the very first thing. And then, once that happens, of course, I always recommend working with someone, right? Well, I'll share the way I work with people, but I don't, it, whether it's a coach or a therapist, like a trauma-informed coach or a therapist. The next thing, because when you recognize it, it does bring up stuff. It can bubble up emotion. It can cause the irritability. It can create activation in interactions that you never activated you before. When you recognize, oh my gosh, there's trauma there, right? Just the recognition of it can be activating. One of the ways that I do it is by working with the unconscious or the subconscious mind, because the unconscious mind holds all of our memories. Right? The unconscious mind is connected to our nervous system and our neurology. And we know that trauma doesn't only live in the mind, it also lives in the body. And that's why there are certain physiological reactions that can happen before sometimes our mind can process it. And so, really starting to help my clients get to the root of what that maybe initial event was. Through the process of neuro-linguistic programming, through the processes of hypnosis, through unconscious mind deep work. That's how I do the work. And I say you don't have to relive the trauma to heal the trauma. So I do it in such a way that I'm not dropping people back into that traumatic event. So that's the way that I do it. There are many other ways that of therapeutic work that I know work really well, but I love the unconscious mind work because it really gets to the deepest core. You know, there's only so much we can process consciously. But when you can go beyond that, you really get to the source of it and allow yourself to sort of detox it out of the cells and out of the body.
Beautiful. What a valuable way to explore it and to work with it. And then beyond that, so you're kind of touching on this a little bit, you have quite a few modalities that it sounds like you work with people on for trauma, because then there's also, hypnotherapy and mind remapping and behavioral transforming. What do those look like? Like, and how do you choose what do does, the people that you're coaching, do you give a little palette of everything, the little taste of it all, or do you sense when somebody needs a focus on one modality more than the other?
Yeah, it's very individualized work. And so the first thing that happens is that we have a conversation to just really discuss what's the complaint? Like what is the surface complaint? Because there's always a surface complaint. People come and they say, because nobody comes to me and says, I got trauma. Right? That's never happened. But it may be that, I've got this goal and I know that there's something I can't see that's holding me back. Or I feel like I'm self-sabotaging in this relationship, or I feel like I'm self-sabotaging in my job. And so we have a conversation about what is the complaint, and then I start to take a little bit of history. And I mean, that's my diagnostic background. It's what I do. And then from there, I can kind of determine, okay, well, maybe we just need to do a few hypnosis sessions to unlock, what's going on. Or if someone, and if this is like more of a short-lived thing, maybe we do, a couple of sessions. But if it's more of a long-standing, if I hear it, then I may say, oh, well, maybe we need to do deeper work. What's called timeline therapy is the process that I do that happens over about 8 to 10 weeks. So eight sessions over about 8 to 10 weeks. And so that's the process that I do if I feel like there's deeper work to be done. And also it depends on like what's the modality that might best fit the person. I remember starting in one client doing some timeline therapy, and the modality, like it wasn't comfortable for her. It was too hard for her to do that modality. And so the flexibility that NLP teaches us is to be able to discern that and then switch, because I have so many tools in the tool belt that I said, okay, well, this doesn't work for you. Let's do this modality. And that turned out to be a better modality. It was hypnosis. It turned out to be a better way to go for her, right? So it just really depends on the person, on the time we have together, on what they feel they can manage, and what's going on.
Thank you so much. And then maybe you could take us down, like, how you would approach somebody when you're doing hypnotherapy and then maybe mind remapping. Because again, my audience is big on healing, right? People listen to this show because it's focused on trauma healing. So people always have their ears open for different ways to approach it, right? And even just today, I had, because I'm a therapist by trade, that's still my primary
Yes.
business. Of course,
Yes.
I weave in the spiritual. There's no way to keep it out of anything of my life
Right.
anymore.
Right.
But I had someone who said, Whitney, I think, do you have anyone I can meet in person? Because she's, this client actually wasn't as spiritual, but she said, I think there's something deeper. I think there's this healing that there's something I can't release. And maybe it's energy work. Maybe it's my chakra system. So when someone comes to you and says, I'm having like these reoccurring dreams, or I'm having these blocks with my work and success. I think it's, whether it's like, there's a block in my mind, there's a block in some part of my body. How would you walk that person through like hypnotherapy or mind remapping? Like, what would that look like?
So I'll share with you that mind remapping is sort of the umbrella term for what I do, right? It's just the remap, it's just the reprogramming of the mind or the brain. So, we all have programs that we run already in our brain all the time, right? And those programs either work for us or they don't work for us. And when you come to me and we have the conversation, I'm listening for what are the programs that you're carrying that are not working for us, as that's what you do as well, right? So we're listening for what are the programs, what are the processes that are not working for us. And NLP and hypnosis are primarily process oriented rather than content oriented modalities. And so if someone comes to me and they say, you know, maybe we decide we're going to do hypnosis, then we have that conversation. I am listening for what is the nature of the process that's not working. And we'll have that discussion. And then I say to them, okay, here are some of the suggestions that I might want to use. How do they land in your body? Because I'm very big on somatic intelligence. And so how does that land in your body? Does it sound accurate? Does it sound like it'd be in your voice? How would you say it? Right. And then we go away because I like to develop my, my hypnotherapy session, I call it a script, right? So my hypnotherapy script's customized to the person. So then we go away and then I work on, you know, how am I going to put this metaphor in? How am I going to put this, you know, these suggestions in a way that will flow and will land well in the person's body. And then we come back for a session, usually an hour. And then I put them right into the hypnotherapeutic trance. And usually I do it through storytelling. That's the way I do it. I love, you know, Ericksonian, Milton Erickson. He was a great storyteller. And that's how I do it, because it's most comfortable. And then that's it. I mean, if we go away and we meet again, how are you doing? Right? If we need more, we do more from the hypnosis standpoint. So that's the hypnosis side of it. With the timeline therapy, let's say this people, someone comes in and I say, you know what? There seems like there's a lot of limiting beliefs. There's a lot of inherited negative self-talk that you have. I think maybe timeline therapy would be best. There's a lot of held charged emotion. Timeline therapy might be best. And so the structure of that particular modality is release of negative emotion first, then release of limiting beliefs and decisions. And the reason is because a lot of the beliefs that we hold are very tightly interwoven with our emotions, right? The emotions come, like the thing happens, it activate some type of physiological response. We label it an emotion, and then we then label it with a belief or self-talk, and then we continue to build evidence over our life that that belief is true. So we release the emotion first, and we start with anger, sadness, fear, hurt, guilt, shame. So we do it in that order, and then we move into now all of these self-talk conversations that you're having. Now let's release those. And then I usually like to end with a little hypnosis to kind of lock everything in and ground and settle everything in. So that's the structure of how I do my work.
I'll take that package, please. I'd like to sign up for that. That sounds wonderful. And what does happen for people? Because listeners of my show range everywhere from like super out there spiritual and newbies kind of exploring. And some people may not even know what hypnotherapy is. So what's going on for somebody? You said that after that, after you've kind of taken them through like the identifying, the releasing, and then bring them through a bit of a hypnotherapy session, what happens for them in that space? What's going on during hypnotherapy that's beneficial in terms of being able to, my understanding is that you access what's not always accessible to the conscious thinking forefront of the brain, kind of lets you work out some of the stuff that's swimming around back there that we may not realize.
Yeah.
But you can probably say it better.
No, that's beautiful. I love the way you said it. So for me, so you know, in the hypnosis piece, number one, just to give people who may be new to hypnosis, it is going into trance. And so if you've ever like meditated, you put yourself into a light trance. If you've ever, like, if you're a runner and you've experienced the runner high or that runner zone, being in the zone, that's a form of trance. Or listening to music and dancing and you like really get so into it, that's trance, right? So everybody's been in trance, even watching television and you get so into the program, someone's calling your name and you don't even hear them. Guess what? You're in a trance. So basically it's a focused state of attention. And when you, depending on what you're focused on, it kind of allows suggestibility, right? So it allows the relaxing of the mind in other ways. And so what I do is I take people into a deeper form of that relaxation or that trance, that's a focused state of attention with the body relaxed. And it often people say it feels like a really good power nap, right? And you're here's the thing, you're not asleep because you can, this is what the experience is that people have shared with me, and this is my experience when I'm hypnotized as well. You're completely, totally relaxed, but you can hear everything that's going on. Like you can, my voice always goes with the person. They're aware of what's going on. They're in control of what's going on. It's just there when you have a level of rapport, you're able to relax yourself enough to just focus on the voice and the thing that and the journey that the voice is taking you on. And that's what allows one to access that deeper, those things that are swimming in the back that I love the way you said that, right? And so that's the experience a lot of people say. In terms of the timeline therapy, it's an awake state process. And so with timeline therapy, when we go to release an emotion, there's brain work involved. I'm only facilitating the journey. The person on the other end is doing the work of releasing, downloading new, what we call them learnings, but it's like you become aware of new things that you didn't see before, and you download those and you say them out loud so that your mind, your unconscious mind hears those, and it gets settled into the cells. Oftentimes, what two things happen after each, because we do maybe two emotions per session. The session's about an hour. After the session, the person will be tired. I often tell them, make sure maybe like don't go jump on a meeting immediately after this. Like maybe like take some time, reset, and they will sleep really good that night because they have done brain work. The other thing that happens is because of the release of the emotions, they can immediately feel a difference physiologically. So it's either like more energy, or if they carry a lot of anxiety, maybe more relaxed than usual. They tend to respond and react to things that they would normally respond to very differently. So as an example of that is, I had a woman, and we did the first session, we released anger and sadness together. And she came back into the second session, and she was like, something's going on because my husband said something to me that normally I would clap back on, and I just like kind of chuckled it off and walked the other way. And I was like, oh, well, all right then,
And that is healing,
Yeah,
right? Sometimes it
it
takes feeling the absence of something to realize, oh, wow, something was really there. And that's why I always like to give people compassion and validation that the way we respond, we don't actually choose it. It really is truly the result of things that have happened to us that
Yeah.
created this belief system. And so it's like this, it's almost like its own living thing. When, because the example of your client, someone makes a comment to you and you immediately are reactive and upset. It's not like you want to be like that. It's not like you're like, I just want to be a big asshole and just be
Right.
mad. It's eliciting something. But when healing happens, it's not even about like just trying to extinguish it. It's something just goes away. It's because it's
Yes.
energetic, right? Trauma is energy that's stored there.
Yes.
Anger is this built up energy that's not able to be released. When you release it through these types of treatments, through these types of modalities, it's just not there. Like just the way your client described, I've experienced that. My clients have, where you're just like, it's not there. I don't have, and it can also go with, because I specialize in addiction, and the same thing can be seen where you do the work and suddenly you just don't have that same desire that you used to, maybe to run and get a drink, to go and binge on food, whatever your addiction was. You're like, I don't want to do that, even though this upsetting thing happened, even though this challenging event occurred. I don't, it's gone. So it's really remarkable when you realize that.
It is. And it's so funny, Whitney. And I wonder if you experience this. I've been doing this work for like 12 years, and every time I work with a client, and because every client, like the manifestation of the healing is different, but when they come back and they're like, oh my God, this is like every time I get the goosies, like I get the goosebumps, like yes, I have a dance, and I know that most people are listening, but this is I do this
Oh
dance.
yes. I love it.
Makes people laugh. If you
We're
happen to,
gonna
if there's a video that happens to
be
be,
using this video. So it is on YouTube. So people get to see your dance. What do you call it? Is there a name for this? Is there a name for this dance? I
Yes.
it. Well, it's such a beautiful thing because it's so human. It shows that we're all the same and we're all just looking to feel at peace,
Yeah.
to feel free, and to be able to feel joy. And
Yeah.
when you see someone and they say, I feel so much more at peace, that's when the goosebumps happen because it's like you see, you feel, it's kind of like the phrase namaste, like the light in you honors the light in me honors the light in you. It's like you're
Yes.
like, yes, two humans just being real with each other and helping each other
Seriously.
heal. It's just so beautiful. You just got to do this.
You just got to do this right.
There's nothing else. There's no other way to respond to
Yes,
that.
absolutely. Oh my gosh. I love that you did it with me. I said, just do it just again.
It's so fantastic. Have fun. Your clients must have a blast working with you. They get to
Yeah,
heal and then
we
have
have fun.
fun. And
We definitely have fun.
that's great. That's great. So let's talk a little bit more about finding the roots of self-doubt and self-defeating thoughts, because you said that's what you kind of help people find and release. But let's talk about that in general, because it's basically an epidemic of the human species, which is that there's very few of us who walk through this world and who are like, I'm wonderful and people like me and today is going to be a good day. Most of us are like, oh shit, I messed this up again. Oh, I'm the worst at the. It's wild.
It is.
So how do we get to the root of that when people have reached their breaking point and they're like, I can't live this way anymore? Because I
Yeah.
know that's the point that I reached. I will never forget when I got sober when I was 28 and my mind felt like a bomb went off. I was anxious on top of my already deep insecurities and negative thoughts and all of this rumination. I had to go see a psychiatrist and I told him, I said, it's such a mess in here. I was like, I think I'm gonna need a lobotomy if I'm ever gonna like have some peace of mind. Cause I literally couldn't imagine that my brain and my mind could ever feel at ease. It always felt so loud and negative and angry. And it felt so tangled that I could never get it straight. So how do you help people with that when they're saying, there's no way this thing up here is gonna get worked out?
Well, the first thing I have to assess is are people ready to let go of those conversations? Because as you know, sometimes people so deeply identify with those conversations that they don't actually know who they are without them. And so that's like the first place is, are you ready? Because what if you're not, then what is the secondary gain? Like what are you gaining from holding on to that frame of mind? And so that once we get past that, then it's a matter of discovering like when was the first time that you heard that thing? So like you have generally there's some like major conversation that's recurring in one's mind. Sometimes it's multiples, but the there's the branches and then there's the trunk and then there's the roots, right? And so when we look at these various conversations, what are the conversations pointing to as a central theme about what you think about yourself? And where was the first time that you thought that, or where was the first time that you heard that? And that's what we go to in that timeline therapy process. Like, what is the root cause? Where's the first time you heard that? Where's the first time that you thought that? Was the first time someone said something like that to you? What was happening? And then recontextualizing that event. That's how the process of timeline therapy works. Recontextualizing, looking from these different points of view, because oftentimes when you're five, things are a lot bigger and they feel you that you feel a lot deeper than when you're 35 and you're looking back on this event when you're five and you can take some learnings and say, oh, you know what? This didn't mean this about me. What this person said about me, it wasn't actually me. It was their trauma or their stuff, not my stuff. Or, oh, it was something in the moment that happened that maybe I didn't see or understand that I now understand. And even though that shit rolled downhill on me and it wasn't right, that I can now let that go because I know that that's not true about me, right? This is the way that that process works with when I do it with my clients, right? So then when you're able to let go at that event, then you see where you have built up all this evidence and you can come back and you can release it on everything else. Like, oh, here are the time, oh, here's a time where I limited myself because I thought that thing back there was true, but now I know it's not, so I can let that go. Right? Here's another time, now I can let that go. And it just frees people up when they realize that something they thought about themselves was not true, and they realize why it's not true, because whatever that event was, it was in that moment in time. And while it felt true in that moment, you can honor that it felt true in that moment. You can now recognize that it's not true and that you're someone else. And you can look at all the things that you've done over your life that actually are what's the word that I want to use? All the things that oh my goodness, Whitney, there's a word that prove that that's not true, right? You can look at all the things that you've done over your life, all the things that you've felt and experienced over your life that prove that that was a lie. Now that you can see that that was a lie, right? And that is what is so powerful about the process.
Those are the moments that free you. Those are the moments that release you from the chains, right?
Yes.
Because I always describe those beliefs as these chains that bind us to being like, no, I'm never going to be loved. Who am I kidding? I'm not. I was told I wasn't good enough. I've felt not good enough my whole life. There's no way, not me. And we're bound by that. But just as you said, we're just waiting for like this gentle offering that says, maybe look back and see, is that true? And that's such a valuable question that I always encourage my clients to ask is with any thought that's self-defeating, that's negative, is that true? Is it true that you're not deserving of love? Is it true that that can't happen for you? Because just as you said, we can get very attached, because I know that was my experience of like, no, it is true. I'm not even going to try. I'm not going to go out with them. I'm not even going to go out tonight. There's no point. I'm worthless. I always will be. So I'm not even going to try. And you feel like you can't help it, but in a way, you kind of just get attached to that label until you are willing to make that, because it is a courageous act to say,
It is.
okay, I can go back and look at, okay, maybe that's not true. Maybe I can stop that story. I can stop repeating that same message to myself, because how is it serving me? Because at that point, because, as you shared, it starts from something. And it's usually from another source, it's from somebody else. But then that it could be one instant, but then we're the only ones that keep perpetuating that one message over and over again. That message happened one time. And just as you said, it's usually somebody, it wasn't really about you, it was about them. It wasn't even true in the first place, but you took it to be gospel. And then you keep repeating it like it's the gospel for the rest of your life until you decide to wake up and say, this is not the life that I want. I don't want to tell this story anymore. And then we unshackle ourselves.
Yes. And I love that you said it was a courageous act, because it really is. It really is an act of courage, because we like to know. We like to know what's going to happen. We like to know who we are. And when we've identified with these beliefs for so long, and then we start to release these things, it kind of throws us into this, well, then if I'm not that, then who am I? And that uncertainty can be scary, but we can reframe that, and we can, and it's like, well, who am I? Wow. I'm a blank slate. Like, I can be anything that I want. I can create who I am, right? And yeah, I don't exactly know what that is yet, but it's okay to not know. And because I think we've like, there's the message in our society, like, you have to know. And so if you don't know, like, oh, what are you gonna do if you grow up when you grow up? I don't know. What? What are you doing with your life right now? I don't really know. What? So you got, it's like, to be in the space of I don't know has to be normalized and be okay. Because when you can sit inside of that uncertainty, it allows for things to arise. And that's kind of the spirituality of it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And it's also, you might say, the divine feminine aspect, which is what my show is a lot
Yes,
focused
indeed.
on, much
Yes,
focused on,
indeed.
because it's that notion of
I'm in my mind's eye now, I'm seeing a flower that's slowly budding. You know, things bloom in their own time, and you can't go from a little bud into a full flower. Just our world that we live in now wants to say, oh no, we can, let's like genetically engineer it so we can just bust open that flower right
Girl,
now.
girl.
Right? And then what breaks my heart, and I'm sure you feel this way too, is to watch kids feel like, well, I need to figure out how I'm going to, you know, make be successful, because if I'm not, then I know that I won't be happy, and I have to feel all this pressure. And you know, to be honest, like, kids are robbed of their childhood
They really are.
because they're not given a chance to just enjoy it. From the second they're in like third grade now, they're being told like, well, I hope you get into AP classes in high school, because guess what? If you don't, you're not going to get into the right college. And then you're going to, you know, it's just like, it's like this idea of, I can't just be with life. I can't just enjoy life. I have to be worried all the time about what am I doing? What am I going to be? And what am I going to do with my life? Rather than like, well, who are you? Can we just focus on that? And that's why I'm so big into the divine feminine, because the return of that means the return of those principles to life, to our world. It's like, can we get off the fast track and just be with life, be with one another? Because here's the other thing that I'll just touch on quickly, is that not only do individuals need to heal our trauma, but the collective. There is
Heck
so
yeah.
much unaddressed trauma in our world because of the way that we've decided our value system from the thousands of years ago. I mean, the atrocities that have occurred on our planet, human on human atrocities, are, it never healed and they weren't even addressed.
That's
And we
right.
try to sweep it under the rug and say that we can just move forward. But just as you see with your clients, if you do that and you try to say, well, it's in the past, let's just forget it, it still sits there. The energy sits there, it's not released. So there is work to be done. And it is collective, but it can, on the individual level, when each person starts to heal their own trauma, that's how it begins.
That's how it begins. And it's so interesting. I love that you brought that. Woo, girl, juicy. Because that's the work in organizations that I do, is people are like, oh, we need systemic change. We need systemic change. I'm like, but who runs the system? People do. People with trauma from generations and generations passed down. Do your work, individuals, so that you can start to like retool the system. Right. When the people who are doing the healing start to, we reach this sort of a certain mass, then we're going to be able to turn the Titanic around. Not, you just can't, you don't like randomly turn the Titanic around. You have to have all of the systems, the parts, the people who are doing the work have to be working. So I love that you brought that in.
Yeah. And I feel like we could talk about that some more. We got to have you back on the show,
I'd love to
Aisha,
come
because
back.
that, I mean, that's, ex I get excited when I talk about that, because as difficult it can be to look around our world and say, wow, how did we get here? It's equally exciting to think, what can we do from here if we begin to shift and change and address the things that need to be addressed and heal the things that need to be healed? The human potential is infinite.
It
And
is.
humans are beautiful at their core,
Yeah,
as you and I see.
definitely.
When you work with a client who's been suffering, who's felt trapped, and they heal,
Oh my gosh.
there's nothing more precious than that.
Absolutely.
The
Absolutely.
goosebumps, right?
Absolutely.
Goosebumps.
Absolutely. I want to just like even like come back to the remark you made about our kids, because I think like, you know, they're our future, and then and we definitely need to be paying attention to how we interact with our kids from that standpoint, and which traumatizing our children or not, or avoiding that. I feel like we have a lot to learn from children. And one of the things that I do with my son now intentionally, it started during the pandemic when I had to figure out how to entertain my son, is I started just playing with him. I feel like we, part of the healing that we do can be experienced through playing. And we lose that very early in life because of this whole, well, you got to be thinking about the future, you got to get to college. And I've been presupposing that the kid wants to go to college, right? Like we put them on a track, and paternalistically, you know, yeah, we can be a guide and we can be a partner, but like to presuppose and to put them in the box, that's how we put ourselves in the box. And so to like be as children and play and let that be a part of our healing, I think that's one thing that we really can take a lesson from our babies.
Absolutely. Completely. We're supposed to be having fun here. That's what I always say. It's like kind of wild. Like who decided that life was so serious?
Yes.
And I think it goes all the way back to when we felt like the most important thing was survival, and we had to be vigilant about that. And we've sort of kept that. Talk about a deep held belief. Yes. And the only thing it's done is to truly keep us from expressing what we came here to do, which is expression of our soul. It's a true, authentic expression.
Yeah.
And that's all we're really meant to do here. Mm-hmm. You know, we've just gotten a little lost, and it's okay to get lost, but I think we're finding our way. I think since we're all connected, we all have a higher knowing. It's like we all will eventually remember the truth of who we are and why we're here. Yeah. And it's going to involve a lot more fun and goofiness. Like, we're supposed to be goofy,
funny,
and just have a good time. And I'm all about that. So,
and that's why I dance. That's why I dance with my clients.
That's why we dance all the way through.
All the way through.
More dancing. I love it. Oh my goodness. Maisha, this has been such a beautiful, fun conversation with dancing and laughing. I love it. Thank you so much for being a guest on the show. And thank you for sharing your wisdom and your knowledge. If people would like to find you, if they'd like to learn more about you and listen to your podcast, how can they do so?
Thank you for asking. And first of all, thank you for having me. I loved this conversation. I mean, I loved our last conversation. And so I knew this was going to be fire. So I just appreciate you and thank you for having me. If people want to find me, if they want to learn more about the work that I do, whether it's speaking or training in an organization, or whether it's one-on-one work, or whether they want to get into one of my courses, it's mindremappingacademy.com, mindremappingacademy.com. And if you want to like check out the new podcast, Behind Beliefs and Behaviors, you can find that on your favorite podcast platform. So we're on Apple Play and Spotify and Amazon Music and iHeartRadio. So just look up Behind Beliefs and Behaviors, Getting to the Root with Dr. Maisha.
Thank you so much, Maisha. This has been such a blast. I know lots of people will be looking for you and finding you. You're such a gorgeous resource in this world. So thank you for the work that you do.
Thank you, Whitney.
Take good care.
You too.
See you next time. That wraps up our episode for today. Thank you so much for listening to Women Waken. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with others and come back for more. If you'd like to connect with the Women Waken community, you can find us on Instagram at Women Waken. And if you follow Women Waken, you can get a free tarot card reading if you just send a DM. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day, and don't forget to let your unique light shine into this world.